Long-time listeners of the podcast will know I'm a big science fiction nerd. Well, I'm not that big. I'm 6 feet and I've lost some weight. But I love science fiction, and a pet peeve of mine is that science fiction as a genre is not something that the theater does very well. Theater does comedy, theater does tragedy, theater does classics. But fortunately, my friend Michael Bernard is doing what he can to correct that with his new play that was recently performed at the SciFest 2014, a festival of one-act science fiction plays. Michael, how do you even pronounce the title of your play?
Alien the Family.
It's a pun!
It's a little play on the TV show All in the Family.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast number 397, Science Fiction Theater. Michael Bernard's play, Alien the Family, was recently presented at SciFest, the Los Angeles Science Fiction One-Act Play Festival. Michael's an old friend from Boston University, Improv Boston, and American Stage Festival, and he recently talked with me about our shared combined loves for science fiction in the theater and his play, Alien the Family.
I have no problem with puns, first of all.
Obviously, yes.
I applaud puns. I think they should be applauded, and you got to get some people in the seats. And it's a comedy.
Yes.
How was the meathead a robot? How did it?
No, it had nothing to do with All in the Family.
Okay. Okay.
I just literally had no. Because originally I did not write this for the Science Fiction Festival. I wrote it for a show I do here in Santa Barbara. That is a live radio show that originally was a show that we used to record and then was played on the UCSB NPR station.
Oh, cool.
And now we just podcast it.
And it is called, what's it called?
It's called Live from the Piano Kitchen.
Got it.
So it's it takes place in a friend of mine's sort of warehouse space, and we have, singers and storytellers, and if somebody's doing a play, they come and do a scene from the play, and we interview a local artist, and then there's always this two-part radio drama. Sort of like what's that show, Carry Home Companion, but with a bad attitude. So I always write a radio play, and I always try to give it a goofy little title like that.
Mm-hmm. Did you write it because you two share my strong feeling that...
I love science fiction. I love Star Trek. You know what, I've always loved this idea that is not in science fiction anymore, but is such a funny part of old-time science fiction, 50s, 60s science fiction, is that our people feel this way. Like, you come to a planet, and the entire planet has one trait. You know what I mean? It's like we all, no one here cares for broccoli.
What is this thing, broccoli, of which you speak?
Yeah, right. And my wife, one of the things that actually first attracted me to her was she used to do an impression of every woman on Star Trek, which went like this. What is this thing you call to kissing? Oh, but wait, quick, my father comes. And I just was like, I wanted to sort of throw those all in. My sort of poking fun. So the play was really poking fun at 50s science fiction.
Cool. Well, and I'm
telling the Romeo and Juliet story.
And I know that science fiction is important to you because I believe I was visiting you, I'm possibly staying with you at your house in your apartment in New York on the night that you first showed Star Wars to your sons. Am I right about that?
I don't think so. Because. Okay. Because I have twin boys, and I remember that one of them was sick. One is autistic, and his ability to watch like a long movie story and follow the whole thing was a bit delayed from his brother. Mm-hmm. And Jackson, who is the non-autistic one, was homesick for a week here in Santa Barbara after we moved here. And I was working on something. I don't think it was this radio play. I was working on this screenplay I was writing, and I thought, I really need to watch Star Trek, because I was throwing in Star Trek references. No, Star Wars, I mean. And so I said, let's watch Star Wars. And I think he was four. And his play overnight became horrifically violent. He watched all three Star Wars movies that week. He was homesick. And then all of a sudden, all his play was violent. And I was like, wow, that was a mistake.
Wow. But
he's a huge Star Wars fan. And we've shown him some Star Trek since then. And he loves science fiction.
And now he walks around saying, what is this thing to kissing? how was the, did you participate in this sci-fi fest thing at all? How was it?
Yeah.
Tell me about it.
So here's what happened is a woman who was producing it, I knew from years ago, and she came to see, cause I've started doing improv again with this group of friends.
Yes. The minute my wife leaves town, Los Angeles.
Living in her, that's her theater. Right. So she came to one of those shows and she said, hey, I'm doing the science fiction thing. Do you have any science fiction things you've written? And I said, well, I've got this kind of silly radio play. And so I sent it in and they liked it. And then, in fact, your listeners can not hear the version we did at the science festival, but they can hear that. So we remounted it at my radio show here in Santa Barbara so I could hear what jokes worked. And then I did a big rewrite and then we did it as part of there. They said, do you want to make it a regular play, not a radio play? But I wanted to keep it a radio play.
Okay.
Because, it's changed locations. There's tanks, there's spaceships.
Right.
It just, like, how are you going to do that in the theater? Which I think is what everybody thinks with science fiction in the theater.
Yeah.
This festival really found a way around that. But I would say that the festival itself, which I really enjoyed, I saw every play, some more than once. It really was more Twilight Zone.
Ah.
You know, it was more like the heady concepts. There was one play, though, that was a Ray Bradbury script that had, I guess, never been performed. And I will say that the script itself was not fantastic. But the way it was staged, it was astronauts in a spaceship that explodes, and they're all drifting through space. Mm-hmm. And the way it was staged was unbelievably riveting.
Yeah.
You know, and these were guys floating in space. No, there was no wires or anything. And what they did was they lit all the space helmets from the inside. So all you could see, the stage was dark with stars sort of on the, against the back wall. Mm-hmm. And then you saw these people sort of, you know, one guy was literally just like lying on his back on a Pilates ball, but rocking back and forth. You know, somebody I think was hanging by their arm from a pipe. And so one guy was just like walking through the audience, but because of the way it was lit, it was almost disturbing and interesting to watch and really gave you a sense of isolation that I think in a way the theater can do that's creepy because the guy's right next to you as opposed to the movies. So that was really cool.
Yeah, theater can't do the big spectacle of tanks and spaceships exploding, but it does its own form of spectacle, and this sounds like that was that.
Right. I mean, yeah, well, you do it in Broadway and you do it in Vegas, but feel like, you know, I've seen a lot of those shows, they're fun and whatever, but I feel like I was more freaked out with the less that they had at this little theater than the big spectacle, because then you're just like, oh, wow, look at all those hydraulics.
Right.
That's exciting. But that doesn't work for me as emotionally as just breaking down to something very minimal. There was one play where like a face appeared in the wall. And so they just, for the back wall, they put some sort of stretchy fabric. And so this face would come out and breathe and then go back through this stretchy fabric.
Oh, cool.
So you could see the face. And it was really like, it was so creepy.
That's great.
And no, that's something that can only happen in theater. And you're right, they don't do science fiction that much, but that they found a way. But it really, it was like watching 10 Twilight Zone episodes.
Well, yeah, and such is the scarcity of science fiction in the theater that when a play like Tracy Letts's Bug comes along, it's basically an episode of The X-Files. There's a government conspiracy. And so it's really great and it's really effective because it's two characters in a room. And so it has that intimacy of theater. It has those close quarters of that the theater does so well. But when you get to the end of it, it's an episode of The X-Files. And I was sitting there going, wait, this is it? This is the famous bug by Tracy Letts that everybody's talking about? Has nobody here seen The X-Files? Good God.
Hi, this is Scott Bakula, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Okay, can you please take the gun away from my head now?
Where can you RSC the RSC? Starting in just about 2 weeks, you can see us performing the European premiere of The Complete History of Comedy Abridged at the Pleasance Theatre at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival until August 25th. And in honor of the Pleasance's 30th birthday, we'll also be doing 9 performances of the show that started it all, The Complete Works of William Shakespeare Abridged Revised, from August 17th to the 25th. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReduceShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office venue and ticket information.
You know, that's another genre that the theater doesn't do terribly well.
Sports?
Sports. You know?
Well, that's, I mean, but that, you know, a friend of mine, that's really interesting. A friend of mine, Liz Tichillo, who wrote that book, It's Not Me, It's You. Mm-hmm. I think that's the name of her book. Which is embarrassing now. That's not the name of her book. She wrote a play that took place on a basketball. There was a basketball play where they played basketball during the play. And I thought that was super ballsy.
Yeah.
Because what happens when you miss the shot you're supposed to make? Like all sports stories, they rely on the made or missed shot at the end, right? Mm-hmm. Did he catch the pass? Did he miss it? You and I did a reading of a really, really interesting play at American Stage Festival once that took place during a pool game.
Yes.
And I remember people were like, we love this play. And you said, yeah, this play is great, but what happens if he doesn't make that shot?
Yeah.
Like, that's the whole thing. If you can't – so it's hard to do sports. And it was exciting the way she did it. And I think they had real, like, college basketball players. But then the lead was, like, a Nebushi guy. Mm-hmm. But I think what happened is, like, the real players lifted him up to do, like, a big Michael Jordan through the air thing.
Nice.
They were holding him, yeah. But that's really hard. I mean, did you see that the Tonys?
Yes.
And they show that scene from Rocky, which I'm really intrigued. Like, musical out of Rocky,
yeah.
And I watched that and I think and my wife, we were watching this again, and she was like, "That is the stupidest thing I've ever seen. Like, what the hell was that?"
Well, it's like it's literally fight choreography.
Right.
You know, so it's about movement. It's about movement and spectacle, which, as you're saying, can happen on a Broadway stage,
right,
in a way that maybe wouldn't work in some of the smaller, more intimate venues that you and I get to work in. Will there be a second annual SciFest?
In fact, if you go to the website, they're already taking submissions for next year.
Cool. And will you submit? Will you continue to write in this vein?
I think so. I think that everybody was joking. One of the great things about doing a radio play where the actors just stand and hold their scripts is that you don't have to learn your lines.
Yeah.
And you don't have to rehearse as much.
Yeah.
So they got a couple of actors who had been on Star Trek. Yeah. They got an actress who was on that show Fringe. Mm-hmm. They got, you know, people who were somewhat more well-known in the science fiction community because I think they didn't have to commit as much.
Right.
Which was really exciting. I mean, not that the actors I have in Santa Barbara who do the radio plays are bad. They're great. But, you know, we rehearse it. We read it, like,
Saturday morning
and then perform Saturday night. And so these guys are guys who do it professionally.
Yeah.
They all have done a gazillion, you know, animated shows. And so with, you know, 6 rehearsals or 4 rehearsals, I don't remember how much they had, they were just knocking it out of the park,
yeah.
You know. And I'm a big Star Trek fan. So to have the guy who played Quark, Armin Shimerman, mm-hmm. be the bad guy in my play was, like, thrilling. That was really exciting. So they made a lot of people were joking like, oh, we should do part 2 or a continuation. But I would actually, after seeing the whole thing, I would like to try my hand at actually writing a play as opposed to the radio.
Well, and it's hard. I guess one of the other reasons it's difficult to do sci-fi is that it can so easily descend into camp.
Yes.
And it's easy to do a sci-fi comedy because you're sort of making fun of it. Do you think it's possible to do sci-fi straight?
Do you know yes, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I look at what happened in that show. There were the play that went on right before mine was a comedy, and it was pretty good. I got mad at it because it was kind of long, and I felt like, oh, my play was last. Yeah. I was like, this one's a little too long. I need this play to be 6 minutes shorter, or whatever, 3 minutes. But it was very funny, and it worked really well. And then they had a comedy night that I went to see, and that had some really strong stuff. And then the straight stuff, when it worked, like with The Face in the Wall, or like with that Ray Bradbury stuff, it was really good and really creepy. There was one play that was about you could create a clone of yourself in case something happened to you. So this couple at the beginning, they go and they make the clones, and then the woman's in a car accident. So then the clone comes home, and the man can't love the clone, even though it's the same brain and the same body. Like, she doesn't have the scar, she's younger, and he can't deal with it. And so he ends up taking his own life to have his brain put, its consciousness put in his clone in order for them to work. Like, they did, it was a lot of stuff like that. There's one piece that I didn't love, but people were crazy about, which was an Ursula Le Guin story about a werewolf. Mm-hmm. And so an actress just came out, the actress was Rose on Lost. She was fantastic. And she came out and just performed it like a monologue.
Oh, cool.
You know, that was pretty cool. And she was great. The writing was, you had to love the writing. And it was, 10 minutes long.
Yeah.
10 minute monologue.
Yeah. Your talk about that play reminded me, and I actually had to Google it to make sure I got the title right. Carol Churchill wrote a play about cloning called A Number, which is, and I love Carol Churchill. Were you in that production of Cloud Nine?
No, I was not. I was jealous of everyone who was.
You and I know each other from Boston University when you were an undergraduate actor, when I was a graduate director there.
Right. Do you remember I used to give you rides on my Vespa? We were in some show together, and I would drive you home on my Vespa.
I do remember that. Through the fence.
Outside, yeah.
Through the fence. It was, we were, was that Trial of God?
Maybe it was that or Hamlet.
Oh, it might have been Hamlet.
Hamlet together, right?
Yes, you were the flamboyant Osric, and I was the personification of evil Claudius.
Yes, yes. You, the graduate student, had the great part, and me, the acting student.
Two graduate students had great parts.
But what I loved about Hamlet was that was 86. Six. So the Celtics were playing the Lakers in the finals during the run of the show.
Yeah.
And of course, there was no videotape then.
Or internet, yeah.
Everybody was on stage that whole show except me. The moment Hamlet kills Laertes, I run off stage. And I would run off stage down the hall to the security guard booth to watch the finals. And I would miss my curtain call.
And nobody ever knew.
Nobody gave a shit. I knew what my priorities were.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. If you want more information about upcoming science fiction one-act festivals, go to sci-fest.com, or you can check out Michael's radio work by searching for Live from the Piano Kitchen on iTunes. Then send us your sci-fi theater pieces via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also post comments on many of our website pages, and you can post reviews of this podcast on iTunes. You can interact with other fans at our website and our Reduced Shakespeare Company Facebook fan page. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter @Reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, ReducedShakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, Klaatu Barada Niktu Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Chloe Stent. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to sci-fi theater guy Scott Bakula, and thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 397 and 1191st of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
I'm still waiting for the X-Files musical, myself.
Oh, hey, from your mouth the gods took us.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to ReduceShakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.